The following is a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Good morning and welcome to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today, we are going to be talking about changing and removing an executor. Now, an executor is one of the most recognizable terms in estate planning. Sort of everyone is familiar with the idea of having someone in charge of your estate, someone who divides things the way that you've requested. But it's a big job. And because it's such a big job with so much responsibility, it's a big decision to make as to who your executor will be.
Definitely, yes.
So sometimes, you know, you choose someone that you think will be the best option and you try to make your decision carefully. But what happens when your choice doesn't work out? So today we are going to be talking about what your options are when it comes to changing or removing an executor. And really, you have two options. You can either change it while you're still alive, in which case it's your choice as to who your executor will be, or it can be changed after you pass away, in which case it's someone else's choice. And we're going to talk about each of these situations in much more detail, but we're going to start with when you are still alive, can you change your executor sort of whenever you want to?
Yeah, absolutely you can. As long as you have what we call testamentary capacity, which is the mental ability to understand what you're doing, then yeah, you can change your executor at any time. I know a lot of times people who are executors and they've been told that they're executors feel that they have some kind of right to be an executor and that's it. No one can change it. But certainly it's your document, it's your estate, and you can change it.
So while your will is legally binding, it's not written in stone. You can change the things that you've put in there.
You can change it if it's your will, of course, yeah, and destroy the old one and make a new one. And then it's carved in stone for other people.
Right, but it's not something that you can never change.
That's right, yeah. And they do get changed pretty often.
And we do find that if you want to make a change, whether it's to the executor or something else in your will, that a lot of people just sort of automatically go back to the same lawyer who drafted the will in the first place.
Yeah, they do because, you know, it's a familiar place. And the other thing you'll find is that people like to come in and say, well, I just want to make a change. I don't want to do a whole new document. And so then they want the lawyer to just simply make a change in a new document that we would call a codicil, which is basically an amendment. And I don't know about other lawyers, but I don't like to do a codicil to a will if I'm not the person that did the will. Because by doing the codicil, you're confirming the will. And if I don't know what's in the will or I haven't drafted it, then I'm not really comfortable saying, yeah, this is a great will and I don't need to change anything. So I don't know, like I said, if other lawyers do it or not. I assume that some do and some don't.
Well, and codicils are sort of falling out of fashion anyway.
They definitely are. That's a good point because codicils were meant to save time. Back in the days when wills were either handwritten, you know, in sort of the fancy flowing script they used to use, or when they were typewritten. So it was meant to save time from doing a whole new will. Realistically, these days, wills are done on a computer and they're saved as they are. So it's actually quicker to come in, take out a name and put in a new name than it is to draft up a codicil that talks about confirming the will and making the change and blah, blah, blah. So it's actually easier to do a whole new will.
And we mentioned that as long as you have your capacity, you can change your will. But what happens if, say, for example, a husband and wife went into a lawyer, got their wills made together, and then only one half of the couple wants to make a change?
Yeah, that's actually kind of a funny situation. That does happen every now and then, not very often. But they usually come in later and they say, well, look, don't tell my better half, but I want to change something. And we can't do that. If our client is a couple, we can't then go and change something for one half of the couple. It's a conflict, so we don't do that.
So what if, say, it's the wife who wants to make a change? What if she goes to a whole new lawyer?
Well, that could happen. I wouldn't necessarily know about it, right? Or the original drafting lawyer wouldn't necessarily know about it. I'm sure that it would get done because there's no conflict in terms of who your client is. I'm sure it would happen.
When it comes to notifying an executor, we always tell our clients it's a good idea to tell the person that you've chosen that they are your executor. It avoids a big surprise down the road.
That's right, yeah.
Is there any sort of regulations or anything that say that if you change your executor, you then have to tell the old person you've been booted out and there's someone new?
Well, there's no regulation. There's no rights in the old executor to be notified of anything. In fact, they weren't required to be notified in the first place of their job as executor. But in terms of making things work logistically, it makes sense to tell them that they're not the executor anymore, so that only the right person steps up when the time comes. But we do actually get a lot of questions. Sometimes they're really angry ones too, about people who say, you know, so-and-so changed their executor and they didn't ask me first. And why would they ask you? Well, because I'm the executor on the old will. So no, there's no kind of rights like that. You're not the executor until that person passes away. While they're still alive, they have full control over who their executor is. And I've also been asked many times by beneficiaries under the will and said, well, you know, mom or dad changed their executor and nobody asked me. Well, no one needs to ask you. It's not your will.
It's not your document. You have no say.
Yeah. And so people do have this idea that there's some kind of right to be notified, but a testator can change their own will whenever they want to.
All right, we need to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about changing your executor after you've passed away.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today, we are talking about changing and removing your executor. And before the break, we were talking about what your options are for changing your executor while you're still alive. But it is also possible that the person who's been appointed as your executor could be removed from the position after you've passed away.
Yeah, and of course, that's not really your choice. Obviously, if you've named somebody's executor, that's your choice. But you're right, sometimes they are removed.
And when it comes to removing an executor, once the person's already passed away and this person has taken on the job, it's almost always the beneficiaries who want to remove the executor.
Yeah, you're right there. It could be other parties such as creditors, but it's almost always the beneficiaries.
And this arises from the beneficiaries being unhappy with the way the estate is being handled.
Exactly.
A lot of the time, beneficiaries and executors are related. Either they're siblings, which is pretty common, or it's some form of other family relation. One way or another, they're intertwined, and family dynamics play a huge role in dealing with an estate.
They do, because they ramp up a factual question into an emotional question. You know, when you want to remove an executor, it has to be because that executor has breached their duty as an executor. And we can go into what those duties are if you like, but the reason you remove them is that they're not doing it properly. And the fact that they're related, like you said, it creates a whole new level of anger and resentment and expectation and disappointment that you wouldn't find among a purely contractual arrangement. And so there's a whole emotional, angry sort of side to it when people want to remove an executor.
Well, and that emotion takes something like a delay or a lack of information and turns it into a personal vendetta in a way.
In a way it does. And that's not to say that the executors are not doing it wrong. I mean, lots of executors are doing it right, but lots are doing it wrong. But it does add an element of urgency and emotion where it wouldn't otherwise be.
As well as the idea that the executor is being unfair.
Yeah, now there's a duty on executors to treat all of the beneficiaries of the estate with an even hand. So they're not allowed to favor one above the other. They're supposed to follow the will strictly. But in families, you do see a lot of speculation and a lot of things like somebody's living in mom and dad's house and I don't think they're charging rent, or they gave mom's car to their son or daughter. And these things take on a huge resentment, you know, that these things are happening. And it's not just the fact that it happened, but people are upset on a personal level that they happened. So there's a breach, but and then there's a big reaction to the breach.
Once that breach sort of hits its breaking point, the beneficiaries do have the option to apply to have the executor removed. And this is not easy.
No, it's not easy. Partly that's because the executor has been appointed by a will, by a testator who made a choice, and the judges are of the court are not easily going to ignore that. Their job is to get at what the person, the testator, really wanted. And that's pretty clear what they wanted. They wanted this person in charge of their estate. So you're going uphill already when you start. The other thing is that people want facts. They want deadlines. They want things like they'll come to me and they'll say, how long does the executor have to do things? You know, how much money can they have? How much this and that? And they want exact numbers and exact dates. And the estate law is not really like that. The estate law is full of things like acting reasonably. And, you know, it doesn't put numbers and deadlines and things on simply because estates vary so much. You know, one can be a house and $5,000, and the one after that can be millions of dollars, a house in Mexico, a condo in Florida, and three businesses. So how could you ever say, you know, one number applies here, but it applies everywhere? So it's a bit frustrating that way, because what you have to do is show that an executor was not acting reasonably under the circumstances.
Which is a much more fluid concept than saying this person took X amount of dollars.
Yeah, and it's, you know, instead of saying the executor had 10 days to do this and he didn't, we don't have that kind of rule. What we have is the executor has to act reasonably. And so then your uphill job is to show that it wasn't reasonable. The only real guideline we have in terms of delay is the executor's year, which is a common law concept that says that most estates that are not complex are wound up within a year.
And then you're left with the situation of determining whether or not it's complex. Right, what one person can handle might be too much for someone else.
Yeah, and so it's not easy. You're right, this litigation is not an easy thing to do. It is possible and it does happen, but no, nobody should go into it thinking it's a slam dunk, because it isn't.
And you had mentioned the concept of the executor's year. So that is something that, again, it is a very open-ended concept, right? Because it's not that, okay, the executor stopped working on the estate for 2 weeks because he had the flu, he's not doing his job, let's kick him out.
Yeah, no, it can't be like that. It has to be pretty severe. We're talking about breaches such as money going missing, assets being wasted, and severe delay. I mean, the executor years is a guideline, and it basically is there to alert executors that they don't have forever to do it. But it also alerts beneficiaries that it's not going to happen overnight. So it's expecting both sides to be reasonable and accommodate the other.
And something else that the executor has to do is act in the best interest of the estate, not him or herself.
That's right. And that's a tough one. It's a tough thing for people to achieve, to do things that are against your own best interest because you have a job to do.
We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we are going to keep talking about changing and removing an executor.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today we are talking about changing and removing an executor. And before the break, we had mentioned that the executor has to act in the best interest of the estate, even if it's not in his or her best interest as an individual.
That's right. The way that that actually looks in real life is when there's an executor that does things like move into the deceased's home, say it was the family home, and everybody else wants the house to be sold, and that's what the will says is supposed to happen, But the executor is living there and not paying any rent, and that's working out just fine. They move the family in. Next thing you know, they've been in there for 2 years. That's great for the executor. It's not so great for the rest of the family who's waiting to get their inheritance. And usually the executor is using estate money to support the house as well. That's one example. It can be things, any situation in which the executor is making decisions that work out better for himself or herself than the rest of the beneficiaries under the will.
So it really could be anything from outright stealing and embezzling the funds to something like living in the house.
Yeah, and just delaying things because you get situations where someone is farming the land and keeping the profits, or, you know, any situation. You're right, it has a huge range of possibilities.
So in order for the court to decide to remove an executor, as we mentioned earlier, it's not something that's taken lightly because it's a huge decision that this person made when they made their will to
choose
appoint
that
someone.
Executor, yeah.
Exactly. So it must be a pretty bad situation for a judge to decide to remove them.
Yeah, it does actually have to be pretty bad. I mean, any beneficiary is going to have a complaint about an executor on an individual item. You don't run to the court every time because your check was supposed to arrive Tuesday and it didn't come till Friday. You know, those things that it has to be really egregious. It has to be something where there's no other way to fix what's going on other than removing that executor. And generally speaking, the court takes the attitude that, you know, you're all adults here, so behave that way and work out these issues between yourself, and only come here when, like I said, there's no other way to fix what's going on. The estate cannot be administered with this person in charge, no matter what. And so at that point, you go to the court as a last resort.
So things have gotten to the point where nobody can agree on anything. All the beneficiaries have a problem with the executor. They've tried to resolve it, but it's just not working. So everybody goes to court. You ask the judge to remove the executor. The judge says, yes, okay, we'll remove the executor. But that's only one of the options.
Yes, that's right. And before I get into those other options, I just want to back up for a second because you said everyone has a problem with the executor. But you know what? It doesn't have to be everyone. It can be only one beneficiary that brings a matter to court. It's great if everyone has the same point of view, but they don't necessarily. Families are families and they divide. But yes, once we get to the point where people are in front of the judge and the judge is going to make a decision, removing the executor is one choice, but the judge is going to think about what is the best option for this estate. One of the things they're going to think about, for example, is, well, who's going to be in charge if this executor is gone? They're not going to leave it with nobody in charge. So that's one issue to think about. Other things that the judge might do, for example, is think, well, you know, this executor will be okay as long as we put some guidelines in place. So the judge might say, for example, I was talking about the person that lived in the house. The judge might say that house has to be on the market within 30 days. And you make that happen. So in other words, the judge can put deadlines and can tell this executor, this is what I want you to do, and I want you to do it now. And so doesn't remove the executor, but gives them a push.
So once those deadlines are in place, say the executor says, okay, yes, I'm going to get myself together and take care of this estate. Say it is, you know, you have 30 days to list the house. Does everyone then have to go back to court and say, look, we did what you said?
No, if the executor does what the judge says and everything goes along happily, then there should be no reason to go back. If that doesn't happen, if the house is not on the market, it's quite possible that everyone will go back and say, see, he didn't do it. You know, we need something else. And of course, at that point, the judge is looking at why the person didn't do it, what's going on. If it's an attitude sort of thing, maybe the person will be removed. Maybe there's another issue like illness or somebody's family situation is really desperate. Who knows?
So in a situation where the executor has been removed, are they just done? They wash their hands of it? Is there anything that they still need to do?
They will be done, but immediately there's some things to be done. The executor who has been removed has to hand everything over to the new executor and has to do it within, you know, in a timely way, not like next year, right? It has to happen. But One of the main things that needs to happen at that point is the outgoing executor needs to file a complete accounting of everything they've done. So when you're transitioning from the outgoing executor to the new executor, you have to know which checks were written and what's in the bank and is the house listed and where's the money and all those other things. All those records have to be handed over. And what the accounting does is it shows the judge how far the executor got. So we know if something goes wrong on Friday, who was in charge on Friday? Was it the outgoing guy or the incoming guy? So it's a way of putting a dividing point between the outgoing and the incoming.
We need to take another break, but when we come back, we will continue our discussion about removing an executor.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today, we are talking about removing an executor. And earlier on, we mentioned that it's usually the beneficiaries that request that an executor be removed and that there is a huge emotional component to that situation. When it comes to removing an executor, sometimes that emotional component leads to the beneficiaries wanting to see the executor punished for having done something wrong.
Oh, there's definitely a big component like that. There's that whole attitude of, we'll show them, we'll get them removed. But it's definitely not just a business transaction. There's like we were saying, a huge emotional component to it. And they want that person not just to be removed, but they want to see him go down in flames. Like it's not enough just to be removed. And as we said, this emotional component makes the litigation very difficult for everyone involved. And sometimes it does happen that an executor is, quote unquote, punished by the court. Probably not as often as the beneficiaries would like because the judge is not emotionally involved in it.
And not necessarily in the way that the beneficiaries would have liked.
Well, the beneficiaries need to realize that there's at least two sides to every story. So they're going to get up there and talk about how terrible this executor is. But the executor is going to defend himself or herself and give their side of the story, too. So, I always tell people when you go to court, it doesn't matter how angry you are, how upset you are. That's not a fact that's going to change the judge's mind. So, just keep a lid on that because it's not going to help your case. But, the judges, for example, can do things with the executor that I suppose you could consider punishment. For example, an executor, as we've talked about a few times, can expect to be paid for doing the job. And if the court thinks that the executor has done such a poor job that they're going to be removed, they may well say, you're not going to get a fee for doing this. Why are we going to pay you for doing a job that you did a terrible job at? So theoretically, that's a punishment, right? Because now you've done the work and you're not going to get paid. That's pretty common that could happen. Another thing that can happen is that if the court thinks that the executor has either fraudulently or negligently lost some money out of the estate, the judge can order that it be repaid.
So when that executor shows his or her accounting, as we mentioned before the break, the transactions that have happened from the very beginning, if there's anything that can't be accounted for, that money could potentially have to come out of the executor's pocket.
Yes, legally that's available, and that's one of the things that the judge can do if the judge thinks that that's fair and thinks that that's the thing to do, then that can be ordered.
So when things are going terribly, everybody's unhappy, someone's threatening to remove the executor, why can't the executor just throw up his hands and say, you know what, I quit?
Yeah, and I can see a lot of executors would like to do that. And I did actually have a case one time where it got so bad for the executor, he just moved to Poland. He just got up and moved.
Just up and left.
Yeah, and left everything hanging, never did finish the estate. But legally, you can't just quit and walk away. Once you've taken on the job, you can't quit until the judge releases you. So at this point, maybe this changes what's going to happen in court, because normally when somebody wants to remove the executor fights back and says, no, you're not removing me. I haven't done anything wrong. But you're right. Sometimes it gets to the point where the executor's going, why am I even doing this?
It's not worth the trouble.
Yeah, it's not worth the trouble. I don't care what they think of me personally. I just want to walk away from it. So maybe at that point, if everyone agrees that this executor is going to come off and the executor's happy to be removed, then, you know, that just makes your application to court easier. You can all agree on who will be the replacement, and you can go to the judge. And again, the executor will be required to do an accounting. That will still have to happen because there has to be that handoff from the old executor to the new one. The new one needs to know exactly what's in the estate when they take it over. So that would still have to happen. And then the judge can, if it's the right thing for the estate, can excuse the executor, who can then step down and walk away. But yeah, wouldn't it be nice if you could just say, the heck with it, I'm not doing this anymore.
And the new executor, if the will has named someone as an alternate, they would be the next person in line.
That would be the logical choice, because that again would be a choice of the testator who made the will, right? Who would say, if my executor can't do it, then I want this other person to do it, this second choice. So if there's one named in the will, that is definitely where it should go.
Because the judge can still protect the testator's choice while doing what's best for the estate.
That's right. Yeah, and a lot of wills, of course, don't appoint an alternate. So at that point, someone else has to step up and be named as an administrator. Now, the judge is not just going to pick somebody out of the air and say, well, you know, you've got a son, he'll do it, that kind of thing. It has to be somebody who comes forward and says to the court, I am willing to take this on. If nobody does that, then the judge might not remove the executor, if they want to be removed.
Does the judge evaluate whether or not that person would be a good fit?
To some extent, yes, because when you look at the removal of executors, a lot of times it's because everyone's in a big fight and there's one side against the other. So, you know, the judge might find that it's going from the frying pan to the fire to just take somebody else who's on the other side of the argument. You're no further ahead, because you're still stuck on the same issue, right? Some people are saying yes, some are saying no. All you're doing is going to the other side. So in that sense, the judge will be evaluating sort of who you are to this argument. And if it is because of an argument, the judge might say, you know what, no, I'm not putting you in charge, because you're no better than the one who just was booted out. So we're going to go somewhere else. So probably a neutral third party.
So could that be someone like, say, a trust company or the public trustee?
Those are exactly the two candidates who would be considered at that point.
All right, we need to take another break, but when we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about removing an executor.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. Today we are talking about removing an executor. And we know that while an executor is working on an estate, the estate can pay the legal fees. That's a reasonable bill for the estate to pay. When it comes to having an application to remove the executor, is that something that the estate pays for as well?
That's not guaranteed the way it is. For the usual general rule is that an executor is always indemnified by the estate. But that presupposes that the work that the executor is doing is for the estate and for the benefit of the estate. So the question is whether this application is for the benefit of the estate or not. And so there's no guarantee. Estate litigation costs have gone the way of general litigation costs, which is what we call the loser pays situation. But with estates, like I said, you have to think about that, but you also have to take into consideration whether it's for the benefit of the estate. So what I would think is that if the application to remove the executor was successful, because you could show that it was in the best interest of the estate to remove the executor, you have a good chance of having your fees paid from the estate. But the executor, I don't think his fees will be paid, because what you're showing is that he has not done his job for the estate. So why would the estate pay to defend him against that allegation, right? So I would definitely caution an executor, if it were my client, that under this situation, I wouldn't count on the estate covering the fees.
And what about the person who applied to have the executor removed, whether it's one individual or a group of beneficiaries? What about their costs?
Well, you know, it's an interesting sort of a question, because when we have the idea that the loser pays, and say you're successful when you have the executor removed, does that mean that your fees have to come out of the estate, or should they come from the executor personally, right? And most of the time, you know, it depends on the value of the estate. Obviously, if it's a small estate, you don't want to drain it by doing this. And there's also the issue about how bad was it that what this executor did? I mean, there's a difference, for example, between an executor who has simply not done anything and delayed matters and an executor who has embezzled money from the estate, in terms of how wrong was it really. So if it's that bad, I would say that the costs are going to go against the executor personally, not out of the estate, because you're basically making the beneficiaries pay if it comes out of the estate. So it's, you know, I realize that's not a yes or no answer, but that is the way it goes with costs. The judge has a lot of things to take into consideration. But if it's really that bad, I would think the costs are going to come from the executor personally and not from the estate.
Well, and when it comes to estate litigation, it's a lot harder to identify the loser in the idea of the loser pays.
Yeah.
Because if it's coming out of an estate,
eventually it comes out of the pocket of the beneficiaries, right? So, yeah, that's why it sometimes crosses the line over to it's not fair that it come out of the estate, because of what the executor did, why should the beneficiaries pay? So, yeah, it's a more complex question than people realize. But the bottom line is, do not expect to get covered by the estate. Be prepared to pay it yourself. And if you get a nice surprise and it does get covered, that's great. But certainly don't count on it.
And we often hear beneficiaries ask if they can call the police on an executor who is stealing money. Mm-hmm. And again, it's a bit of a blurry line as to, do you think they're stealing money? Do you suspect it? Or have they actually stolen money from the estate?
Yeah, and this, again, is one of the areas in which the emotional component blurs people's judgment. Because if they're really mad at people and they want to cause that executor as much trouble as they possibly can, they'd love to call the police and have the person arrested. That would just be the icing on the cake. So that's part of it. But it is a blurry line because, I mean, obviously you can call the police if you have evidence that money's being stolen. But generally speaking, on an estate, you really don't have that evidence. And even if you did have, for example, a bank statement where there's clearly chunks of money have gone missing and you don't know where it is, and the executor won't tell you, so you call the police and the police look at it. What blurs the line is the fact that the will says that the executor can have access to the money for certain purposes. So then what you're doing is you're putting the police in the position of sitting there with a will and a bank statement and interpreting this civil, non-criminal document in a way that has nothing to do with criminal law. So you're putting the police in a position where they'd have to be a judge to have the authority and the ability and everything to look at this document to see whether it really was theft or were they really doing what they're supposed to do with the estate. So, yeah, if you have proof that it's stolen, that's one thing. But asking the police to show up and interpret the terms of the will, which is what most people would be doing, that doesn't work. The police aren't going to do that.
And I think that situation comes from sort of knee-jerk reaction that if a crime has been committed, you call the police. Someone stole something, you call the police. But there isn't that definitive line of, is an executor taking money a crime or not? Because
yeah,
legally they've been given access to it. They're
yeah,
not supposed to keep it for themselves. But again, it's not up to the police to look at that and say, yep, they stole something.
No, it's not up to them. It's right, because the executor need simply say, oh, I took it out to pay the debts, or I took it out for this other reason. And so it's not as easy as you might think. It's not like, here, you know, someone stole my bike and I can see it in their garage. That's pretty clear. But no, it's not very clear with wills.
We need to take another break, but when we come back, we are going to talk about the other options that beneficiaries have for dealing with an executor before going to court.
The Law Show will be right back. This is The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
Welcome back to The Law Show with Lynn and Chelsea from Butler Wills and Estates. We are discussing removing an executor. And before the break, we had talked about sometimes beneficiaries want to call the police on an executor because they think that the executor has stolen something from the estate. And we discussed about whether or not that's a civil issue or a criminal issue. But aside from all of that, say the executor does get arrested for theft or fraud or something along those lines. Does that automatically disqualify them from being an executor?
No, in the sense that there would still be a process to go through. The fact that they've been arrested just means that they're an executor in jail. It doesn't mean that they're not the executor. So obviously, though, if they've been arrested, or particularly if they've been convicted, then it's going to be an awful lot easier to remove them than it would be otherwise, because if they're found guilty on a criminal charge, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. So there's your evidence. But no, even if they are arrested, they still have to, somebody has to go through the process to the court and say, well, look, here's what's happened. Let's remove the executor.
And we've been talking about how stressful and how difficult it is to have an executor removed. So what are the other options or different paths that beneficiaries can take to sort of resolve the situation before it gets to that point?
That's a great question, because I highly recommend that court be kept as a very last resort. It's expensive and it's horrible for people to go through and time consuming. So yeah, there are other options that people should look at. I always recommend that people open the conversation by asking for information. Calling somebody up on the phone and saying, you know, accusing them of not moving out of mom's house or not paying the debts or something, that's no good. You have to have a paper trail and you have to make a formal request for information, and not just tell me what's going on with the estate. Ask specific questions. How much did you sell the house for? You know, what is in the bank account? And, you know, be specific about what you're asking for. And once you've got or not got that information, you can figure out where you're going. If it's a situation where you're not getting information, or the information's clear that there's money missing or whatever the issue is, you can negotiate the situation. Sometimes it's a matter of, look, you know, are you able to replace this money? And as you know, we had a situation in which quite a bit of money went missing from the estate while one executor had it, and that executor was removed and another one came on, and they ended up placing a mortgage against the old executor's home in the amount of money that went missing. So sometimes you can come to an agreement about what to do about the situation short of going to court and short of calling the police.
You mentioned when you're asking for information to leave a paper trail. So you could write a formal letter to the executor, but you could also send an email.
Yes, for these purposes, an email would be considered written, because obviously you can print it and there it is. So yeah, that would work as part of a paper trail. Another thing that can happen is mediation, which, as you know, means that everybody gets together in a room with a neutral mediator who steers the discussion to try to resolve the issues. I am in favor of mediation in estates because I like the idea that a family can work together rather than fight it out among themselves. But to be real, like to be realistic, mediation's only going to work if everybody's willing to work together and they're willing to try really hard to keep it out of court.
So as we mentioned earlier, when there's that anger involved and that frustration and that emotional component attached to it, you have to be willing to let go of that rage for mediation to work.
Yeah, and that's hard for people. And I understand that. I really do understand that, you know, it's your mom or your dad or someone close to you. And it's not easy to just keep the emotion out of it. But it does prevent some people from going to mediation because they just don't want to be in the same room with people, or, you know, so I understand that that's hard and it's not always going to work.
Well, and we've seen families that are in court dealing with these issues, and when there's a break in between the cases, there's an argument breaking out in the hallway.
Yes, we had experience with that recently, didn't we? Yes.
And so situations like that might not be the best candidate for mediation, but if everyone can acknowledge that the best interest of the estate is what comes first.
Yeah.
you're much more likely to be successful with mediation and save yourselves a ton of money going to court.
Yeah, and that's part of the motivation, too, is if people think to themselves, it's going to cost me $50,000 to go to court, but my share of the mediation is $500, that's a pretty strong motivator to, you know, not have to come up with the money. And also, the idea of mediation is that there's not a winner and a loser the way there is in court. In court, one person or one party wins and the other one doesn't. But in mediation, the idea is that everyone gives a little and then everybody wins. And like I said, if we could keep the emotion out of it, it would be done more often. For people who absolutely cannot do any mediation, can't agree on anything, there is a process through the court called case management, which does involve a judge. And it's basically the people who are arguing about things will go back for several meetings with the judge. The judge is not necessarily resolving the final issues on the case, but will help with things along the way, smaller decisions that need to be made that people simply can't agree on. And it's the same judge every time, right? So it's a judge who's kind of in charge of your case and is helping steer you along the way.
You sort of have a babysitter for your case.
I suppose a babysitter with some real authority, though. Right? Like it's a person who, if you come in and you say, we absolutely can't resolve anything, we need some help, they will help.
And are those meetings held in open court or are they private?
They're private. They're in a courtroom, but they're private.
So you have the opportunity to deal with your family issues sort of one-on-one.
That's right.
All right. That's it for us this week. Tune in again next week for another episode of The Law Show.
If you have a question or comment for The Law Show, email onair@vocm.com. This has been The Law Show with Butler Wills and Estates on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.
The proceeding was a paid program on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network.